Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Bob Rathbun here in Atlanta. Exciting times for us, for sure. We are coming down to the wire on all of our national awards. It's so great. And make sure that you are dialed in to our social media channels on Twitter, X, and also Instagram. We break the news there first, so you can find out who makes the cut. All of our awards are going to be announced here, the semifinalists and ultimately the finalists, and our award winners come April. That's all coming up, and you can catch it all on our social media channels. And of course, here on the podcast, we'll be talking ultimately to our award winners, but this is great. And it gets tougher every year, I must tell you, because these great men and women who vie for these honors are turning in absolutely fantastic seasons, and it's going to be hard to choose, that's for sure. And we'll talk more about it on the men's side with the great Mike DeCourcy. That's coming up in just a moment. Our Jersey Mike's news and notes, we want to make you aware of what's coming up this weekend because, man, is it going to be exciting. Saturday on TV, there will be 11 men's championships contested across ESPN, their family of networks, Fox, CBS, CBS Sports Network, all coming up with 11 games on Saturday and Saturday night. And then Sunday, we have 5 men's championship games that will be aired, beginning with the Ivy League title at noon on Sunday. On CBS, you've got the A-10 title game, followed by the Big Ten title game Sunday afternoon. And on ESPN, the SEC, followed by the American. All of that, of course, leads into Selection Sunday. And for the men, that airs on CBS this year at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the women's selection show at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on ESPN. This is a weekend we've all been waiting for, right? Every team in America that makes the field with these hopes and dreams and aspirations of a national championship, this is what it's all about, and we couldn't be more excited. We will talk with Mike DeCourcy about what he's thinking about our awards in this college basketball season when we continue after this from Jersey Mike's.
Once you get the meat and cheese for your sub freshly sliced right in front of you at Jersey Mike's, I'll tell you, there's no going back to anything else. That'd be like going back to dial-up internet. Ugh. Am I connecting to space to order Jersey Mike's? Any day now. Okay, it's about to connect. What? Well, who picked up the phone? Nope, there's no going back once you see it freshly sliced at Jersey Mike's. A sub above.
Always a pleasure for our annual check-in with the great Mike DeCourcy, who joins us on the line. Mike, how are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
Terrific. Before we get started, just from all of us at the Naismith Awards, thank you for all you do for us. You've been one of our longest-serving voters. Nobody has a finger on the pulse more than you, and we so appreciate everything you do for us. So thank you.
Oh, it's my honor to be associated with the Naismith Award. I think it is a premier award in all of college basketball. And being a part of the panel to do that has been terrific for my time associated with the Tip-Off Club.
Okay, let's dive in. This is our time of year, right? This is what we've been working for. Selection Sunday on the horizon after the conference tournaments this week and then the NCAA tournament beginning next week. Of course, our big awards are starting to come into focus. Let's start there with what you're sensing in terms of our Jersey Mike's Naismith Men's National Player of the Year. What's it looking like through the lens of Mike DeCourcy?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, and it's larger than life, and I think that Zach Edey will become one of the rare players to win this trophy twice, and will put himself in the company of gentlemen who are basically the history or the modern history of college basketball, from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar through Bill Walton through Ralph Sampson, etc. It's just a phenomenal collection of players, and to have. Like if I'm Zach Edey and I wake up in the morning and I'm like, wait a second, I'm in the same category as Walton and Alcindor. And I don't know if I could get out of bed if I had gotten the word that I was put in that kind of company.
It is pretty amazing and such a great backstory. We've talked about it a lot here, obviously, as our former winner, but
It still strikes me how far this young man has come, what he has meant to the game, what he's meant to Purdue. And I just think it's what makes college basketball special.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that there are a lot of things that are changing, Bob, in college athletics now with the immediate transfer eligibility and name, image, and likeness payments that aren't really 100% name, image, and likeness payments. I mean, I think when originally that concept was introduced, it was, okay, go do a commercial for the local car dealer and that sort of thing. And it's turned into something different, but it has added value to the college game in that some players who might have felt compelled to go become professional just because they believe their athletic careers to be finite and the earning power of that career would be diminished by another year of not earning, now don't have to make those kinds of decisions anymore. They can make the decision based on, I'm happy where I am. I can continue to grow where I am. I can gain more success where I am. I may position myself better for the best levels of professional basketball where I am. And they can make the decisions based on that instead of, this one pays, this one doesn't. And I can't keep being not paid. That, I think that's a real positive for college basketball, and I think we see that reflected in the NCAA tournament. I think we see that, and we saw it last year with Oscar Tshiebwe. He was able to return for another year after being a player of the year, and we certainly see this with Zach Edey. He's back because he wants to win a national championship? Absolutely. Because he wants to get better? Absolutely. But he also doesn't have to make the decision between unpaid and paid, and that's a hard call for someone who has the ability to make some money. Because he came back, Bob, of every indication that I've been receiving is that he will become a first-round draft choice. And a year ago, that would not have been true. So I don't see how that's not better for the entire game of basketball.
It makes the college game so much richer when we have the stars return. There's no question. Purdue is going to be under the microscope, whether or not they win the Big Ten tournament this week or not, because of what happened last year. And it struck me, Mike, there are two coaches that come to mind immediately that could handle their team being a number one seed losing to a 16. Obviously, Tony Bennett turned it around the very next year and won it all. And the other guy is Matt Painter. I think they've got the personality to that's a lot of heat you take, right, as you're just the second team ever to go out as a number one to a 16. But I think Matt's got that type of personality. Do you see it that way?
Oh, he's a competitor. And he's also very focused. He's intensely focused on what the next goal is. I work with Raphael Davis, who is a former Purdue star. He was Defensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten during his career. And I work with him at the Big Ten Network. We're together every Saturday and Sunday on the studio shows. And he believes that Matt is absolutely intensely focused on the next goal. And I believe when the year started that they wanted to win the Maui Invitational in maybe the deepest field that tournament has ever had, and they did. Then they wanted to win the Big Ten Conference, and they did. And now they'll want to win the Big Ten Tournament Championship, even though it might have a diminishing effect on their ability to win the national championship. They're not going to abandon any championship that's in front of them. They're going to go for this. They will measure probably the players' minutes some, not with an eye toward next weekend, but more in the eye toward you got to play three consecutive days to win this. So you want to make sure that you're fresh enough on Sunday. But they're not going to worry about the NCAAs until they get there. And because they do that, I think that it diminishes the impact of what happened the last year or the last couple of years in the NCAA tournament. The Boilers will get asked about that a ton when they get to Indianapolis, which is where they'll open the tournament. They'll be asked about it a lot, and they'll have to process that. But I think it will drive them more so than it will lead them to cower under the pressure. Honestly, Bob, the only thing that they really have to worry about early in the tournament especially in that first round game, is how they're officiated. The last 2 years when they went out, it was Zach Edey, 7'4", 300 pounds, against a collection of 6'7", 6'8 guys. And they were granted a much too free license to foul him. And when he gets called, when half of the fouls that are committed against him get called, then Purdue is in good shape. In those games, it was probably less than a quarter. They were being granted much too much license again, the fouls weren't dirty or anything, but they just basically hang on his arms, and it's hard to shoot when you got guys hanging on your arms.
The Lilliputians have to play by the same rules, right?
That's right.
Yes, exactly. It's only fair.
You're talking about Matt. Leads us into a discussion about our Warner Ladder Naismith Men's Coach of the Year. But I wanted to ask you first, what is your philosophy, personally, in voting for this award? Because there's a lot of different ways to look at this for the Coach of the Year. Is it the guy that was picked low and succeeded? Was it a guy who was picked at the top and maintained it? What is your philosophy on that?
I think my philosophy is not a consistent one, and I hope that doesn't bother anybody, but it's kind of like you kind of play it like jazz. Each song presents itself differently in each occasion you play it. And that's the truth about a Coach of the Year award. Some years it's going to be the coach who did amazing things that no one conceived, maybe not even the coach himself. Some years it's going to be, I will say that I have one standard rule, and that is if you win every game, you're Coach of the Year. Because the job is to win every game, theoretically. And if you do that the way John Calipari did in 2015 or Mark Few did in 2021 or Phil Martelli did in 2004 or Greg Marshall did in 2014, they were all Sporting News coaches of the year because they won every game. So that one's a constant. But the rest is it's about what kind of challenges you faced and how you conquered them. Now, you could have the best team and not win every game, but goodness, this guy got hurt and was out 3 weeks and he still won, and this guy got hurt and he was out 2 weeks and he still won. That could be a factor leading to a Coach of the Year award, or it could be the guy who was picked ninth in his league and somehow won it. It could be that. People will have a problem with that, but I just think it's because there's no defined criteria other than who did the best coaching job. And I don't like the idea that if you have the best team that you can't win it, because sometimes you face challenges that make you temporarily not the best team.
So who's caught your eye this year in terms of the Coach of the Year?
Well, I think that Kyle Smith at Washington State has done an amazing job, lost a ton of talent off of last year's team, which wasn't very successful, and came back this year to finish second in the Pac-12 and to beat Arizona, to sweep Arizona, which was the number one seed candidate, to sweep them. I think that he did a terrific job. I think Dan Hurley at UConn, again, although they were the reigning champion, but maybe because they were the reigning champion, that's a factor. You got to coach your guys through that. They had some injuries along the way, and they became a dominant team by the end of the year. I think Fred Hoiberg did really good work at Nebraska, a program that has not had great historic success. I believe it's still the only major conference team that's not won an NCAA tournament game in its history and hasn't made a ton of appearances, hasn't been to the tournament since 2014 and almost certainly will go this year. So I think he's done a really good job. I think that Rick Barnes did a wonderful job at Tennessee. I mean, you got to give the guy some credit for figuring out that Dalton Connect was going to be a team changer. You got to give some credit for that. I mean, I realize that adding the players is sometimes a part of the job. I mean, it's a big part of the job in the college level. You're the coach and the GM, and he found an All-American disguised as a second-team All-Big Sky player. honestly, Bob, that Dalton Connect going from All Big Sky to All American is the That second team All Big Sky is my favorite factoid in college basketball history. He was second team All Big Sky, and now he is first team All America. I don't know that I could ever top that.
That is amazing. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time. We know this is a crucial week time-wise for you, so thanks so much for taking time out to join us, and thanks again for all you do for us at the Naismith Awards.
Bob, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week. By this time next weekend, we'll be getting ready for the Sweet 16 for the men and the women. Isn't that incredible? It goes so quickly, but it's so exciting. And we're thrilled to have you with us here on the podcast. From all of us here at the Naismith Awards, Bob Rathbun saying so long.